Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yinhu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 74, Spindle, Q, and A. Tuesday, April 7th, 2015. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yinhu Chaiyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yinhu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Today's episode includes the following segments: The Front Porch, Ever Expanding Skill Set, Chin Wagon, and so forth. I'd like to extend a special welcome to the following listeners who have introduced themselves since the last episode: Annetta T. from Kentucky, Jenny from Brooklyn, she is Salmon Knits on Ravelry, Diane Laces, who is Diane from Galena, Illinois, Lisa from Surrey Langley, British Columbia, she is Tia Mo 92, and Lost and Lovely, Laura from Cincinnati. Thank you to everyone who has introduced themselves and for folks who have recently joined the Ravelry group. Since we've reached 400 members, we've exceeded 400 members, I have randomly drawn for the winner of the Think Green contest. The winner is Crouching Cheese, Angie from Ohio. The prompt for the Think Green contest was to post a photograph of something green. And Angie posted a knitted frog dissection that was all pinned out to a black background. It looked surprisingly realistic. I liked that project a lot. So congratulations, Angie. You have won 2 skeins of yarn that was contributed by listener Deb, who is Little Red Hen. So thank you so much, Deb, for that generous contribution for a giveaway. And thanks to everyone who took part in the contest. Angie, get in touch with me with your mailing information, and I will get that out to you. The Front Porch. Receiving my swap package from Gretchen put me in the mood to cast on a new project, even though I have not completed my scrappy shawl using the Flickerel pattern from Simone Eich. It didn't matter. I will finish that project, but I couldn't wait to cast on something new because the yarn that Gretchen sent for the swap was just so incredible. The purpose of this swap was to increase our soulful stash, and there was a directive to send something that was either local to you or that the yarn had been made or dyed local to where the fiber originated. Well, Gretchen took this to heart when she put together the swap package that she sent to me, because all of the contents of the package came from the region immediately surrounding her in Durham, New Hampshire. And in Durham, New Hampshire is the Great Bay Woolworks, and she sent 2 skeins of yarn from Great Bay. They are Romney wool, incredibly lustrous to ply, in a DK to worsted weight. One is a creamy, lustrous white, and the other is a very, very dark brown. I've been wanting to knit a black and white shawl for quite a while, and I decided to return to a pattern that I've knit before and to maybe add a little bit of a flair to it. The pattern is Aggregate. It's a shawl by Jimenez Joseph, also known as Jimmy Knits, on Ravelry. It is a symmetrical shaped shawl. However, the coloration of the shawl is asymmetrical or unevenly distributed on the shawl. The technique is short rows. I happen to very much enjoy knitting short rows. I use the German short row technique, which works very well in garter stitch. And so I cast on for this shawl, and I'm knitting slowly, methodically, participating in the Gratitude Cowl sponsored by the Fat Squirrel. And I have also thought about adding one red, bright red panel to this shawl. I've seen a few on Ravelry that have this element, and I think it would make a really nice pop and be an interesting addition to a pattern that I've already knit before. When I re-knit something, I like to add something new in terms of a design feature or something a little bit different to keep it challenging. I'm knitting this pattern with US size 5 needles and enjoying it very much. So thank you Gretchen, and thank you to Sarah Swensty and Claire, New Hampshire Knits, for hosting a swap with such integrity to it. I really feel like I learned something. I have been thoughtful. It's made me see the yarn I have in a new way. And it was my first ever swap, so it's something that I think I would like to do again. I know it's a lot of work to put together a swap, so if you're ever in one and you really enjoy it, it's important to thank your hosts, because it's kind of a tiresome thing to work out all those little details. Once again, that pattern I was talking about is Aggregate, a shawl pattern by Jimmy Knits. Ever expanding skill set. Lots of Yarns at Yinhu listeners have joined me in a year-long endeavor to expand my understanding of ingredients and make better use of my pantry. Each month, there is a new topic for discovery and discussion, and a new thread opens up on the Ravelry board. This month, April, is devoted to condiments. I opened the thread a few days early, and ever since I did, there has been excellent discussion and sharing of ingredients, products, tips, and ideas. A little bit later in the month, I will also be exploring condiments, but right now I'm still a little bit hung up on cast iron and the new cast iron skillet cookbook that I received as a gift for Christmas from my sister, Laura. Last episode, I talked about a recipe that I had tried, and while I was paging through the book, I came across tomato tart tatin. The picture in the book looked extraordinary. The food styling in this book is really rustic and has a lot of integrity to it, which is the kind of photograph that makes me immediately want to start cooking whatever is photographed. So I thought making this dish might be a good idea to bring to Easter dinner. If I were very smart, I would have tried it at home before taking it to Easter dinner. But I was fearless and I did not. It's kind of a dish I think that's best shared with a larger crowd. So I waited and I made it for Easter dinner and it came out pretty fantastic. So if you want to look like a culinary rock star, I recommend tomato tarte tatin. So it's a take on a dish that's usually made with apples or other hearty fruit, where you layer the fruit in a caramel at the bottom of a pan, and then you top it with pastry. To serve, you invert it and put it on a serving platter, and then you cut it up. So that's the idea of the dish, except that it's made with cherry tomatoes and two whole onions sliced very thin that have been caramelized, deeply caramelized. And you do make your own caramel in the bottom of the cast iron pan, and I topped it with a homemade pie crust. It was a dicey moment when I was inverting a very hot cast iron pan at my mom's Easter dinner. But it really came out fine. So I recommend it. I'll be making it again. I can already think of some variations I would like to do. So I just couldn't move on to condiments until I had mentioned this dish to listeners. And this is from the book, The New Cast Iron Skillet Cookbook. And I have linked to it in the show notes. Are you playing along? Are you cooking from your pantry? You should use hashtag PowerPantry to mark your posts on social media so that others can find them and join in the conversation. This segment is something I began after taking a workshop with Maggie Jackson of Maggie Knits, who referred to any kind of idle chatter as chinwagon. And it's a chance for me to respond to listener questions and to talk about a topic in maybe a longer-winded or more meandering way than I do in some of the other segments. And this episode of Spindle Q&A has been building up over the past couple of months. There have been some things I've been longing to share about spindles, and I've received a number of questions, and it all sort of built up until I thought, I think I have enough to devote most of a podcast episode to this topic. I actually learned to spin on a drop spindle a little bit as a child. I think I've mentioned my cousin Lisa of Spinner's Hill. She's actually my dad's cousin. She and her parents had a dairy and sheep farm. They still do. It's still in the family, and Lisa is responsible for the running of that farm now. When I was little, my family visited there on several occasions, and we would often go during lambing season. I remember visiting with Lisa and her family. And I remember some baby sheep being born, and I remember that Lisa had a lot of weaving equipment, looms in particular, I remember. But I don't recall learning how to spin on a drop spindle. But I did, because my mom had two drop spindles with singles still on them in her attic from all those years ago. They must be 30 years old. My middle sister, Laura, and I must have had some drop spindle lessons at some point, and the spindles do look familiar when I look at them now, but I don't remember learning how to spin on them. In my adult life, I took a class to learn how to use a spinning wheel. It was a 4-session class taught at the Spinnery, a yarn and spinning shop in Frenchtown, New Jersey. And in the first of the 4 sessions, we did do some spindling on a drop spindle. It was quite a simple spindle. It was very heavy. And the point was to understand spinning conceptually so that we could transfer what we knew to a wheel. I did learn to spin on a wheel, and I bought a spinning wheel. I have a Louette S10 double treadle, which I enjoy very much. But about a year ago, I decided for birthday to treat myself to a Jenkins spindle. Jenkins Yarn Tools is the company, and the spindles are handcrafted by Ed Jenkins, and Wanda does a lot of the marketing and correspondence and things like that. Jenkins spindles are beautiful, lovely tools, and I have 3 of them. One is an Aegean. I have a Lark, and the newest addition is a Cuchulu. So before I talk in depth about those, I'd like to just back up and give a broad overview of spindles in general and work my way toward why I enjoy Turkish spindles so much. There are 2 general categories of spindles. There are supported spindles, which are supported in a cup or a bowl or sometimes a spoon that you sit on the handle and it extends out by your side. And so the twisting motion happens in a supported way. I do not know how to do supported spindling. It's not something I have learned. And at the moment, I am not incredibly attracted to it, but it's something that I could see myself learning in the future. The other category is suspended spindles. These are also known as drop spindles, and they are not supported. They hang freely in the air or off a cliff, if you're Abby Frankmont learning how to spin in South America. And the whirl might be located at the top or in the middle, or near the bottom of a shaft. So generally, spindles of any kind have 2 main parts, a shaft and a whirl. And depending on where the whirl is located, that's often how the spindle is called. So a top whirl spindle, the whirl is at the top. Often spindles, especially beginner spindles, will have some kind of a hook, but that is not necessary. And in the case of Turkish spindles are suspended spindles, and they are bottom whirl spindles because the cross pieces that make up the whirl are located near the bottom of the shaft. Usually a whirl is a circular piece of wood or maybe something decorative, but in the case of a Turkish spindle, the whirl consists of 2 arms that fit together, and each arm is drilled with a hole so that the shaft can be inserted through both of those pieces. That's an advantage in my mind, and according to my taste in spinning, for several reasons. Number one is portability. A Turkish spindle can be disassembled into its three pieces, and it's much less vulnerable to breaking that way. So it's a great way to transport spindles, is to empty them completely, break them down, and then pack them flat. I also like the design of the Turkish spindle because the yarn that you spin is wound around the whorl, not just the shaft. So if you think about yarn and what is yarn, yarn is fiber that has been drafted to some degree, drafted apart, and then twisted, and then held under tension. If it, no matter what it is or what it's made of, if it has those three components, it's yarn. And a spindle is an excellent and very primitive tool for both drawing out and twisting the fiber and holding it under tension, because you wind the singles, or that first freshly spun fiber, around the shaft of the spindle. In the case of a Turkish spindle, you wind your spun fiber around the whorl or the cross pieces of the spindle, not just around and around and around on the shaft. This creates a beautiful, aesthetically appealing design. And I find it mesmerizing the way that the spun yarn accumulates on the cross pieces of a Turkish spindle. This is also known as the kap. So the accumulated yarn on a spindle is the kap. And in the case of a Turkish spindle, there are a couple of different ways to wind the kap, and several of them are visually very appealing. However, the visual appeal isn't really the point of winding the kap in such a way. The purpose of carefully winding the kap is so that you maintain the spindle's balance. If you start to very sloppily wind your spun fiber onto the Turkish spindle, it will become unwieldy and it will not spin as well. And then you start to lose control over the process. So I really like winding my spun singles in an over two, under one kind of manner that creates this beautiful design. Another thing I like about the design of the Turkish spindle is that once you've spun all of the yarn that you want to spin, and in the case of a Jenkins Turkish spindle, I have found that I can spin about twice the weight of the spindle itself before I feel like the integrity of my spinning starts to deteriorate. Certainly the spindle can hold more, and I think maybe an experienced spinner might be able to, you know, almost overpack the spindle. I've seen some where you can't really even see the cross pieces of the spindle anymore. It's just this giant ball of yarn. I find that it's best for me to stop and remove the kap and start over building a new one after I've reached about double the amount of the spindle. In order to remove the kap, you simply loosen and then slide out the shaft, and then you can slide out one cross piece and then remove the second cross piece, and you are left with a center pull ball. This is very important because most of the time your finished yarn is not a single ply. Yarn is much more durable and it holds its twist much better if you create at least a two ply out of it. And so you spin, 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 but usually you still need to do something with that spun yarn in order to create a stable yarn that's going to work well into some kind of project that you're making. And I like the Turkish spindle because you can save yourself that step of creating a center pull ball or winding yarn off on some kind of storage bobbin. It's all ready to go. And you can just take each end of your center pull ball and put them back onto the spindle and spin in the opposite direction to create a two-ply yarn. And that is not always, but often what I will do. I will use the same spindle to spin the fiber and then ply the yarn. You can also do other things. You could ply on a heavier spindle. That's a popular technique. Or you might ply on a wheel. So those are three practical reasons why a Turkish drop spindle appeals to me. And in the case of Ed Jenkins spindles, the craftsmanship is really sensational. So to go back to Margaret's question, Maggie of Maggie's Corner asked me about what spindles exactly I own and which is my favorite. I think that the Jenkins spindle is certainly an investment. I wouldn't necessarily recommend them to a beginning spinner, but they are incredibly special to me. The first one I purchased is my favorite spindle. It's an Aegean spindle, and its design is based on a spindle that was brought to Ed Jenkins from someone who had been traveling in Greece. It's unique in that the cross pieces fit together in kind of an interlocking way. So it's a little bit different from some of the other spindles. My Aegean is made from black mesquite wood, and it's 19 grams or 0.67 ounces. My second acquisition is a Lark. The Lark is almost a mid-whorl version of a Turkish spindle because the cross pieces sit up pretty high on the shaft. And that's nice because it gives you, I like to flick or spin my Turkish spindle from underneath, and I have a very large hand. So I like that because it gives me quite a bit of room to grab underneath the spindle and to get it going in a clockwise direction so that I can spin. My Lark is made from Osage orange, and what I wanted was a spindle that was a different design but quite similar in weight to my Aegean, so that if I wanted to, I could tear a large piece of fiber in half and then work each half on a different spindle and then ply them together. I would essentially have two center pull balls. So the Lark I have is 20 grams. So it's very, very close in weight to the Aegean, or 0.7 ounces. My most recent acquisition is a Kuchulu. A Kuchulu is a very, very tiny, very delicate spindle. I have a photograph of several spindles on my blog, and I put a quarter next to the Kuchulu for scale. It is 7 grams, or a quarter of an ounce, and it's made from a very dark wood called carob wood. it's so tiny that it's actually a little bit tricky to spin, to grip underneath and spin. And it doesn't have the spinning power that the lark and the Aegean have. It doesn't spin as long, and it's much quicker to kick back and start spinning in the opposite direction. This isn't quite so pronounced once you get a little bit more weight onto the Cuchulainn. It starts to spin better and better the heavier it gets. But I can't put too much fiber on there because I don't have any room left underneath for my fingers to grip the shaft and spin. I know that some folks spin a Cuchulainn from the top, but I can't quite get the hang of doing that. And the tip of the shaft is so fine and delicate that I'm worried that if I use that part to spin it, I will break it. Right now, I have three different spinning projects going on each of the three spindles, and I enjoy them very much. I am hesitant, however, to travel with these spindles. I like to have a spindle with me at all times, and I have taken to doing some spindling while walking. But the Jenkins delicate spindles are not made for that. So I was interested after I, sort of became enamored of working with spindles. I was interested in purchasing a much more durable spindle that I could throw into my bag, that I could use on the go, that I could use around students or around children, and not worry so much about it. And I heard, I think on the Knit Girls podcast was where I first heard about Turtle Made. Turtle Made spindles are printed on a 3D printer. They're incredibly durable, and I own several of those. I really only have one in my possession. The others are being used by students, and I have them around at school. I like them very much. I find their spin time and the enjoyment I have in spinning them is comparable to spinning with a Jenkins spindle. And I don't worry about them because, they're not very expensive. And I have to say, though, even though they're so much more durable, I have not had a mishap with any of my Jenkins spindles. But Samuel did sit on my Turtle Made spindle and snapped the shaft, which was quickly replaced. And since that mishap, I did learn that even with a very durable plastic spindle or resin spindle, it's important for storage to remove the shaft from the cross pieces before storing. When I was just beginning with Turkish spindles, I didn't do that because it seemed to me that pulling that shaft out would just create a problem within the center pull ball. But that's not true. And really, a Turkish spindle should always be stored or transported with the shaft removed. It's much easier to break the shaft if the spindle is all put together. Before I continue with responses to additional listener questions and some excellent listener advice, I want to announce a giveaway. Jen of Turtle Made has been just a really great contact. I enjoy her product very much. I've recommended it to quite a few people who have made purchases. And before recording this episode, I contacted her to see if she was interested in a giveaway, and she agreed. So a lucky, lucky listener will win their choice of spindle from the Turtle Made shop on Etsy. I should mention that when I first began purchasing spindles from Jen, they were limited to Turkish spindles, but she now has additional styles of spindles, all printed on a 3D printer, all very durable, and in a dazzling array of color choices. In the case of the Turkish spindle, you can choose different colors for the shaft and both arms, I believe. So Jen has generously agreed to give away a spindle from her Etsy shop. It will need to be something that is in stock and excluding custom orders or holiday. I think she has some holiday things going on too. So I've put all of that information into a thread on Ravelry. And what you need to do to enter is to go on over to the Turtle Maid Etsy shop and take a look and then make a post about some product or maybe a color combination that you find very interesting. And before I record episode 75, I will be selecting a winner via random number generator, and I will announce the winner on episode 75. So thank you so much, Jen. Jen also is a vendor at a few regional shows and fiber festivals, so you may have had or have in the future an opportunity to meet her and see her products live. But she has a very well-stocked Etsy shop with very clear photographs of the products. So check it out. All right. I wanted to respond to a few listener questions, share a few pieces of advice of my own, and some generous listeners have also contributed comments on Instagram. NDAK Katie asks, what's the best way to ply spindle spun singles? Wind off into balls or a lazy Kate? She also says Turtle Maid spindles are great for budget-minded or clumsy spinners. I broke 3 Top Whirl student spindles learning to spin fine yarn, and for $15 got a light, durable Turkish that spins forever and won't break when I snap the single. All right, so the best way to ply. I think the best way to ply with a Turkish spindle is to really capitalize on the time that you've taken to carefully wind your cop and to use the center pull ball to spin. So just taking the outside end and the inside end, which always comes free. I had panic that, you know, the very beginning of your single would somehow get lost inside the center pull ball. But that doesn't happen. When you pull out the pieces of the spindle, that always comes out. I put those two together and then I attach them into the Turkish spindle as I put it back together and start spinning it in the opposite direction for a nice two-plied yarn. I've heard people share horror stories about a center pull ball that was just so incredibly tangled that they couldn't make heads or tails of it. I have not had that experience, and some of the yarn that I spin is quite fine. I think it's important not to try to work too quickly. If you feel like you're coming to a snag or something might be tangled, just slow down, take a deep breath, and don't tug too tightly on things. And in some cases, especially the very center of that center pull ball sometimes comes out in a big snarl, or sometimes it's referred to as yarn barf, and there's just kind of like a big blob of single, and that has a tendency to be vulnerable to tangling. So what I sometimes do is I just pull off an equal amount from the outside of the ball, and then I slowly wrap those around the outside, just gently, not tugging too much, but I slowly wrap those around the outside of the center pull ball until what's coming from the inside and what's coming from the outside has been evened up again. And then I continue plying until I use all of that up, and then, you know, keep pulling on the inside and the outside as I ply. If you find that you just feel too clumsy and things are tangling up, you might take a small dog toy. Actually, this is something I learned from Malia Jackson. I took a class with her at the Super Summer Knit Together on spindling, and she has just a fantastic collection of different kinds of spindles. And she bought these little toys. I think they come 3 or 6 to a package at a pet supply store. They're toss and catch balls made for small dogs. So they're smaller than a golf ball. And they're, they have a kind of fabric on the outside that's very clingy. So what you might do to prepare your singles for plying is to take the inside and the outside, and instead of starting to ply it together using a spindle, you could just wind a new ball. It's not a center pull ball, but you're holding those two ends of the singles together, and you're winding that around this little toy, so that you know it's even and you have a chance to work out any tangles without your spindle involved that's sitting on the side until you're ready to ply. That's also a method for plying that I use if I'm spinning on top whorl spindles and the cop is just, you know, yarn wound around the shaft. I put the spindles on the floor on a carpet or on a towel so they're not knocking around too much. And I just take the two ends and I take that little toy and I gently wrap those singles around and around until I have a plying ball. And then I take that to my wheel or I use another spindle and ply those things together. I do not have a lazy Kate for spindles. I've seen spindlers with some that look incredibly inviting, but it's not something that I own. So I can't really give it any advice to that, except to say they do seem incredibly useful. Maybe you could try one out or talk to someone who has one. Kato 2309 wrote, "I'm receiving my first Turkish spindle, hopefully next week." Oh, maybe she has it by now. "And it will be my first time using a spindle. I have a spinning wheel, so I am experienced, but wonder if this makes me a spindle spinner too. Which fiber would you suggest for me to use? I'm very excited." Oh, Kato 2309, I'm very excited for you too. I think that doing any kind of spinning is preparation for any other kind. So certainly spinning with a wheel and understanding spinning techniques will assist you in using a spindle, I think, because conceptually you understand what you're doing. You're just using a different tool to do it. Yarn that is spindle spun tends to be a little bit softer and gentler than yarn that's spun on a wheel. So if you have expectations of getting the exact same product, you may be a little bit surprised. And you definitely have your hands working in a little bit of a different way. So be patient with yourself. It might take some time to get. I will say that working with any kind of suspended spindle, there is a method called park and draft. And when you see someone spinning with a suspended spindle, it's spinning freely and they're doing all of this magic with their hands and everything is happening at the same time. And every once in a while they reach down and they flick it to put a little more spin on it. Well, that's a lot of stuff to be happening at one time. So the park and draft method breaks all of these different facets of suspended spindling into two parts. So in one part, you're twisting the spindle, you're really getting it spinning, and you're storing up this twist or tension. And then you park it, usually by pinning the shaft of the spindle between your knees. And that's why the vast majority of student spindles are top whirl spindles, so that you have this long shaft and you can easily clamp it between your knees or even between your feet could be another way to do it. And then without the spindle spinning, but all that tension stored up, you draft the fiber that's in your hand and let it move into that twist. So you really separate the parts so that you're not having to do all of those different things at the same time. If you start spinning with a suspended spindle and you feel frustrated, I would recommend searching for a park and draft video on YouTube and trying that for a while. Once you get good at all of the motions, you'll feel very frustrated by park and draft and you'll just want to put all of those steps together. But park and draft is a great way to begin. I have linked to some videos by Abby Frankmont, as well as a lot of additional information about spindles on my website. So there's a link in the show notes, but actually on the Yarns at Yinhoo website, I have an entire page devoted to meditative spindling. And I have tried to put comprehensive notes about important tips onto that. So it's a good place to check. As far as fiber, I think that a medium staple fiber that has some real grab or stickiness to it is a great fiber to start with if you're a beginner, both on a wheel or on a spindle. The one I really like is BFL or Blue-Faced Lester. I think it's just this perfect medium weight, medium staple fiber that spins easily. It drafts easily. It makes a really nice, durable yarn. It has some nice luster. It takes dye very well. So if you're using dyed fiber, you know, it will be pretty and interesting. Spinning something that has a really long staple length can be very difficult. Something with a very short staple length will feel frustrating. And anything very slippery, like spinning alpaca as a beginning spinner, I think is a bad idea. It will just slip, it won't grip, your spindle will keep dropping, and you will feel very frustrated. In addition to the type of fiber, you might also consider the fiber preparation. If you're buying dyed or commercially processed fiber, usually it comes in a braid. It's combed top and it's all smoothed out and it looks like super irresistible in the braid. But that kind of fiber can, even if it's Blue-Faced Lester or some other grippy fiber, it might be quite smooth in that combed top preparation. So spinning natural fiber is great, or spinning a preparation like Rolags or Poonies where fiber has been blended and rolled up, that can be a great thing for a beginning spinner. It's in a small piece. It's easy to handle. And the fibers are sort of like mixed up and not all smoothed out. And it makes them easier to draft and to spin. Here are some listener tips. High fiber diet. Kagi recommends, if looking for smooth yarn as you're spinning, untwist the fiber a bit when you're first starting the next drafting segment. This lets the twist join evenly. And Kagi, that's a great tip because I think where beginning spinners get hung up is, okay, I've spun this piece of fiber that's in my hand and that's been all good, but now I need to add additional fiber and how do I do that? So what she's suggesting is that you take what's been twisted and you untwist it a little bit and reveal that fluffy end. And then you match that up with fiber that has not yet been spun and it will lock together a little more quickly and smooth out. Polka dot knits. I found Abby's Yarns Respect the Spindle DVD. This is a Abby Frankmont DVD to be extremely helpful in learning to spindle spin and ply on a spindle. She's naturally very, very gifted teacher and a pleasure to watch. I couldn't agree more. So Abby Frankmont products, there are some free tutorials that you can find online. And she also has Respect the Spindle, a book, and a DVD as well. Could be a great place to start for a beginner. Gail BN, advice to new spinners. Don't be hard on yourself. Nothing replaces time and practice. I wish I had known that. Heather 01851, don't be ashamed to park and draft for as long as you need to. There will be a transformative moment when you fall into the rhythm and spin and draft, draft, draft. So don't be afraid to park and spin. And Sono Mama Mama, number one, don't let some non-spinner at the local yarn store sell you their student spindle that is so heavy it can't do much but ply. This resulted in a 2-decade delay in my finally learning to spindle. Also, Craftsy's Fluff to Stuff really helped. There's a Craftsy class called Fluff to Stuff. I think it uses primarily a supported spindle, but I have not watched this crafty class, so I can't be sure. But it seems to me from watching the introduction that it's primarily a supported spindle video. Still, the concepts of spinning will be the same, and so maybe you would find that helpful even if you plan to use suspended spindles. A few more do's and don'ts I have about spindle spinning is do try a variety of spindles. Don't be afraid to ask another spinner if you can watch or if you have questions about spinning, or to try a spindle if you see one at a festival or a shop, or you know, if you know someone well enough to ask them to try. I think your favorite spindle is a very personal kind of choice. And so the more spindles you try, the more likely you will be to find that perfect fit. Sono Mama Ma, number one's comment about a too heavy spindle is so true. I think the reason that many people find spinning unpleasant or think they don't like it is that they start on a beginner spindle and often they can be 2 ounces. That's very heavy. And when you're using muscles that you haven't used before, you know, you're holding your arms out, you're drafting the yarn, even 2 ounces can start to cause strain and tension very, very quickly. So I think, you know, if you're an adult and you can be trusted with knitting needles, you can be trusted with a lighter weight spindle. and maybe get a bit more enjoyment out of it. I recommend trying something in the range of 20 to 25 grams, or, you know, just under an ounce to just over an ounce for a beginning spindle. And try a variety. Try top whorl, bottom whorl, Turkish. Many spindles for beginners are made out of wood, but that doesn't always need to be the case. You could try spindles made out of other material. Consider fiber that has a mid-range staple length. Consider preparations such as rolags or punies. There are a lot of folks who swear by short but very frequent spindling sessions. There's a whole Instagram thread focusing on, you know, 15 minutes a day for the entire length of 2015. And that's a really good rule of thumb, because just a little bit of time is going to keep you from getting fatigued or frustrated. But if you keep going back to it, you will build your skills. And finally, what I have to say about spindle spinning or any kind of hand spun, and I've said this before, is knit with it or weave with it, crochet with it right away. Use your hand spun yarn. In the first place, you will find out a lot more about what you want in a yarn if you go ahead and try to use it after you make it. And I think that will be instructional to help you keep progressing with the yarn you're making. And the second thing is, you're going to get better and better. And you probably won't think that first yarn you made is very appealing 6 months or a year after you made it. You'll think, oh, I could do much better, or oh, I just look at that and notice, you know, how bad my joins are, or something like that. But when you've just made it right away, be excited about it and use it. Use it for something. Nice, lumpy, bumpy, sort of thick and thin hand spun yarn is a really nice thing for a small ornament or a toy. Bird of Happiness is a great pattern, but there are so many others. Usually when you start spinning, you don't have a lot of yarn. So making something small that's a gift or an ornament or a keepsake or even just something kind of funny for your desk, that can be a really great way to use up your yarn and learn a lot about it as you're knitting with it. Well, I've certainly done a lot of chin wagging. I didn't expect to go on quite this much, and I still want to talk a bit about my sewing. So I hope that these tips and this information has proven useful if you are considering starting or venturing into spinning. Maybe it will convince some of you who have sworn off spinning to give it another try. Don't forget to enter the Turtle Maid contest giveaway and check out all of Jen's fabulous spindles on her Etsy shop. And so forth. In this final segment, I'd just like to provide a bit of an update on my sewing progress. I have upgraded my sewing machine to something that is a little more heavyweight. I stuck with my initial claim of not wanting a computerized machine. So the machine I have it's still a manual. This is the Sewist model. I'm forgetting the model number, but it's just a bit of an upgrade from my initial machine. One of the reasons Samuel purchased the machine he did at the store where he did is that they have a program where you can upgrade your machine for a full refund of the initial purchase within the first 6 months. So that was something I had been thinking about doing, and it just took me a little bit of time to decide what I wanted to do. So I made a little bit of an upgrade on my machine, and then I needed to get familiar with how this new machine worked. So with a week off for spring break, I decided to start small and build my confidence and work my way back up to this skirt project that had gone very wrong. I made a few project bags that went well, and then I made a new tote bag for myself. This is the everything tote pattern that I had made initially in winter after I got the sewing machine. And when I made that first tote bag, I really liked it. I liked the design and I liked the size of it a lot, but the lining was really cool and the outside looked so plain. I wished I had embroidered something onto the front of it. So this time I had some kind of heavyweight canvas fabric in a navy blue. It kind of looks like denim, but it's not as stiff as denim. And I embroidered a design onto that and used some buttons from my grandmother's button box. So I was really happy with the front of that bag, and then I lined it with this bright orange fabric. So it's the perfect tote bag for spring. I've been using it already. Then I felt prepared to work on my skirt project. I abandoned the idea of drafting my own skirt pattern and I went to the yard sale wrap skirt by Heather Ross. These patterns are all in the book, Weekend Sewing by Heather Ross, and it comes with patterns. You need to make your own pattern with paper. I used tissue paper and cut everything out, but the pattern is printed. I needed to lengthen the skirt because I'm quite tall and I did not want the skirt to hit at the widest part of my calf. To me, that looks so dowdy and I didn't like it. So I lengthened the skirt and then I cut out 8 skirt pieces. So it's quite a full wrap skirt and the drape is really nice. It was easy to sew. I pieced together the waistband and ties out of some of the batik fabric that I had used for the feathers. So I'm happy with the way that came out. I have not hemmed the skirt, and I would like to put in a buttonhole on the side of the waistband. With a tie waistband, usually with a wrap skirt, there's a place where the tie passes through the band of the skirt. And I need to do that. So that will give me an opportunity to learn how to work the buttonhole feature of this new machine. And then the last step will be to applique the feathers. Right now, I have some feathers pinned to the bottom of the skirt. And I think that what I will do, since this is a wrap skirt, is just put 4 feathers across the front of the skirt and leave the back plain. I haven't committed to that though, which is why I haven't started sewing anything on. I just keep pinning them and repinning them and positioning the feathers and trying to think about what it will look like when I'm wearing it and where I want these to be placed. So the sewing progress was great this week. It was so nice to have a week off and just be able to set up my studio space for sewing and leave it set up like that and keep going back to work on my projects. Well, thanks for listening. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man.
River bends like an elbow, turning stone to sand. It's a survey of nature things. It's a survey of nature things. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire, just like Linda Kurtz sings, burn out on a wire. It's a survey nature thing. It's a survey nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's a brigade, you high till your face is mine. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a survey nature thing. It's a survey nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.